Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
What say you, Richard Pellett Murdoch? Are you guilty or not guilty of the felonies wherein you stand and die?
Not guilty.
How shall you be tried?
By God and my country.
The exact time when Paul and Maggie Murdoch were murdered.
At the end of the investigation, it was obvious.
I'm not here to work with them. Okay?
And the whole point is to have this not fall into the wrong hands. This case is unique, it's unprecedented in South Carolina history.
The state versus Richard Alexander Murdoch, defendant, indictment for murder. Okay. Guilty verdict, signed by the forelady, 3223.
Welcome to Unsolved South Carolina, the Murdoch murders, money, and mystery. We are having a very special broadcast tonight because the verdict is in. Alec Murdoch has been found guilty on all four counts. And joining me tonight to discuss what we saw, I have with us our executive producer, Drew Tripp. Down here we have our exclusive legal analyst, Charlie Condon, South Carolina's former attorney general. And right here to my left is my reporter who I've been working with, WCIV's own Tara Jabor. We're thrilled to have her here with us. And I want to just get started right away. Charlie, you were in the courtroom and we saw sort of how things started to go down. It happened very quickly. We got a verdict very, very quickly within, what, 3 hours?
3 hours or so, yeah. 3 to 4 hours.
What was your take? And I'm going to tell you right now, you got, since we're a live stream, you just got,
Oh, thanks.
You got
live
television.
What was that?
I think it was like a little Japanese beetle. Okay, so we were in the courtroom together, and we were sort of watching this, the verdict roll out. Tell me what the vibe was in there to you. You were a little closer to the defense table.
It was quite the vibe. It was, I think most people expected it to be a guilty verdict, given the fact that it was so fast, and it would be hard to imagine with the evidence out there that it would be a not guilty verdict. So there was that expectation, but still you didn't really 100% know. But once the word guilty came out, you just knew once found guilty in one indictment that it would flow with the rest of them, because the evidence was basically the same for all of them. And you could see I was right behind the defendant himself, just a row back, and behind his defense team, and you just sensed the disappointment, that would be the word I would use. And then over to the left, you could see the relief and the, it was so joyous. Not the right word with a murder case, but it was one sense of relief, but also satisfaction.
They held satisfaction, I think, is a really good word.
Yeah, maybe better words. But they held in check their emotions. Both sides are very professional. But I could say once the verdicts were announced, this was a moment for me because I'm right there behind the defendant. And he clearly turned to, I had to assume it was Buster, because Buster's right behind me. And in a very dramatic moment, he mouthed the words that, I'm sorry, and I love you. And it was just quite the moment for me as he was whisked away. Dan Gregory, who has been the person in charge of security there, he was up close to the defendant, out came the handcuffs. I mean, he was changed from a defendant there being on trial with courtesies being given to the defendant, to Richard Allen, or Alexander Murdoch, until handcuffs on. Quick change, and was whisked away, wouldn't you say, quite quickly?
Absolutely whisked away. And you know, I was watching Buster while you had your eyes on Alec, and I got the flip side, the mirror side of what you were seeing with Alec as he said mouthed these words mm-hmm. to his son and whoever was sitting there, and I want to talk about that for a minute too. But Buster had his head down, and he was he looked inconsolable to some degree,
yeah.
and very defeated,
yeah.
And very worried. Of course, all those things we would normally see, but really that full impact, I felt like it was almost hitting him like a wave, like, it's too soon. I can't really take in these words that my father is trying to tell me right now. As
yeah.
he
and his uncle wasn't
me
there.
Forever.
Well, John Marvin, I guess, couldn't get back in time.
No.
So that would have been a support system. Not that Lynn hadn't been supportive, but I think that was not there for him.
I know. And John Marvin Murdoch had been there for his brother, and he couldn't be there for whatever reason. Randy wasn't there, but the sister was there, and so was Buster. It was quite a moment. Now, from what we saw in the courtroom, you guys were seeing it from another angle as well. And just to kind of let y'all know, like we're right now where we've been doing our live shots. If you're listening to this podcast somewhere far away from Charleston, South Carolina, this is the Colleton County Courthouse, where we've been doing all of our work as journalists for 28 days, 6 weeks, pretty much embedded in this story. It has been our home right here. So when you came out, Tara, like what, you were out here as that verdict was being read. Tell me what your initial thoughts were.
I think it's similar to what you said. You know, it almost felt surreal. It was like when they went into deliberation, it was this moment where, wow, it's been 28 days. We've seen 75 plus witnesses take the stand, hundreds of pieces of evidence brought into the courtroom, and then we heard a decision at 6:41, and we were like, wow, the decision's in under 3 hours.
Right.
And you know, Ann, you went right inside. You and Charlie, Katie Salt and I were out here, and we were watching as Judge Newman was reading this decision by these 12 jurors who ended up siding with the state of South Carolina.
Yeah, it's incredible. Now, you were in the media center as this was going down, Drew. I mean, you were live blogging, so Drew's been literally keeping this real-time track of what's going on. What was your thoughts as you heard this?
This may sound odd, but almost anticlimactic, just because of how quickly it came and how I'm struggling to really describe it. It just came and it was done. And here we are 19 months since the murders and all of that, and it just, there was some deliberation, very little anticipation, and then it was just over. It's just like that. It's over. And I kind of looked at Joe Erickson, who's one of our producers. He's down here with me today helping on website stuff and social media stuff. And we just kind of looked at each other like, okay, that
here we go.
Finality. It's surreal. It might be a little overused, but it was a really eerie feeling in the moment. Not almost emotionless, being from the observer's point of view and being immersed in this for so long.
Well, I want to go back a little bit too to what we heard earlier in the day leading up to this. I know it's kind of after the fact, as
true,
it were.
True.
But I think it's worth like bringing up the effort that went
true,
but into
I thought
it. Right?
Good advocacy by both sides. I thought they both put their heart and soul into their arguments.
Well, so let's play a clip quickly. We're not going to have a lot of time because we do have to use the same set to go on air at 10 o'clock. Mm-hmm. So we're going to be have more of an abbreviated one tonight, but hopefully we'll make up for it tomorrow as well. Can we go ahead and play that clip from Jim Griffin?
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with Bite Clear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
What if Paul, the detective, learned the source of drugs that were being sold to his dad. What if Paul, the detective, goes to that drug source? He says, cut it out. That's my dad. You're ruining my family. And if you don't, I'm going to tell on you, turn you in. And what if source is a member of dangerous drug gang?
No, I don't object.
We heard him talk about how there was like that third person theory that, what did you just call it,
yeah,
Charlie?
It's just generally accepted that among lawyers you don't object to the other person's argument unless you really feel the need to. And obviously John Meadows felt the need to because he was introducing what one would call third party guilt, that my client didn't do this, other person out there. And there are standards on that. You just can't throw that out there without having had some proof of it. And so Judge Newman did sustain the objection. The bell was sort of rung, so to speak. That thought was out there. And so there wouldn't necessarily be proper for them to have considered it during deliberations. And obviously it didn't win the day. But I think he felt like he had to do everything he could to try and get one or two jurors to hold out for not guilty.
Well, you know, go ahead, Drew.
I came into today, and Charlie, I said this last night, I came into today thinking what would have to happen to persuade me and to sway me. And I'll tell you, Jim had me when he was, to use the phrase that I've used, and I think I even heard John Meadows use it today, he was putting Sled on trial. And I was there with him. I was there with him. But as I said in a previous episode last night, today I needed the defense to kind of put up or shut up a little bit and bring it home. If you're gonna go there, give me something tangible. Give me something I can sink my teeth into. And at that point, when they're just kind of throwing out wild theories and there's no meat on the bone, I guess you could say, that's kind of where.
Right.
Did my best, but that's where it kind of went downhill for me, and I just didn't know that I didn't find Jim all that persuasive from that point.
Yeah, and you know, I want to talk about Meadows closing. He said something that literally stuck with me from the moment that I heard it, and I wrote it down. He said, this case is about two things, being real and choices, and he weaved that through the last words from the state. He said, you know, Alec was not real, but Blanca was real. Alec was not real, but, you know, Shelley was real.
Right.
And then he said, you make choices in life, and no matter who you are, you will always be held accountable for those choices. And that was powerful.
Mm-hmm. It was powerful. He actually even used the Velveteen Rabbit as his example, because as a child, he had gotten a book that was like, always be real. And that's what his mom, I think, had written in the Velveteen Rabbit book. And he used that to sort of, as you know, you really have to bring them home with these things, right? This was the last argument. John Meadows was their last argument. Mm-hmm. This was the prosecution throwing everything at that.
Mm-hmm. And I thought that was a really good choice of staff members or assistant attorney generals to handle that argument, because I think he's very experienced with murder cases. He had that nice, I thought, mix of arguing facts, but emotion to it. And just, I felt the jurors were sort of nodding with him, didn't you? He just seemed to really connect with them. And just the way he argued it, and obviously it was effective, because that verdict, 6 weeks? We've had that, how many witnesses? And they come back
hours? I think we were up to 70 or 80 witnesses by the time this wrapped, which is, and you said tonight, you confirmed that this is
my understanding now. Yeah, I spoke with, actually I think it was the Attorney General himself, who said that he understood that the trial against Pee Wee Gaskins was 5 weeks, not six. I thought it had been six. So here we're in 6 weeks in a non-capital case, and of course in a capital case you have, if there's a guilty verdict of murder, you have a day wait in between with nothing, no testimony. We didn't have that. So straight through 6 weeks. So I think this may be the longest trial in state court history in South Carolina. And of course the historic nature of it is not to be understated, because, wow, I mean, however you look at this, you have a very, you know, prominent former attorney with deep ties here. And John, by the way, John Meadows did bring it up, didn't he? Brought up his family in the argument, didn't he? And how he was, found it offensive that they're trying to say that putting law enforcement on trial and say they were responsible and they fabricated evidence. And so I think that's quite the vindication, by the way, for the state law enforcement division. I would be not surprised at all that we don't see Chief Keel here tomorrow, Mark Keel.
Interesting. Yeah, for
because
the
I think that'd be very appropriate because they alleged this fabrication of evidence. They put that on trial. They certainly put a number of the agents, especially the main case agent, David Owen, through the ringer.
Oh, and he his name got brought up every day.
Mm-hmm.
Every day. There was something about how sub-agent Owen hadn't done
fabricated
something.
Evidence.
And right.
It got to the level. I mean, this may be a bit of a stretch, but I didn't really think so. When he talked about the fabrication, to me it was like alleging that the state law enforcement division was involved in criminal activity. Really, when you start thinking about it, fabricating, manufacturing evidence to convict an innocent person was basically what wasn't quite said that way, but that was a clear implication.
Mm-hmm.
But here you have it.
There was
12 jurors here didn't buy it.
I noted some glossing over there mm-hmm. in some of those points by Jim.
Mm-hmm.
And that was, I think, another one of the points that stuck with me. Something you said last night, quoting a judge from your career, about sweet reason never sent anyone to the electric chair. I thought the through line between Jim and John Meadors of common sense today.
Mm-hmm.
And Meadors really hit home on common sense, but also emotion. I thought he balanced that really, really well.
Yes.
Did you not?
I did. I thought I really thought it was just a great argument. And I thought Jim Griffin had also a good argument. But from the standpoint of the state of South Carolina, wanted to bring these jurors along with the evidence that they had there and using those themes of common sense. And he used that initial, it really threw me off because CSC typically means criminal sexual conduct. And he said, this is a common sense case.
Yeah.
And it got my attention. And I thought about that. This really is a common sense case because if you step back from it, really, there's so much evidence against this defendant. And he'd had to explain it. And then, boy, did he drive home the lying part, didn't he?
Mm-hmm.
Whoa, and the lying about the being at the kennels, and he had to wait to the last moment to have another moment of why he lied about not being truthful before. Yeah, as you said, the lie about the lie. And so it was just really well done. And I know, as I said, we may have mentioned this earlier in one of the broadcasts, as I left the courthouse here to come out to do the interview, I did see him. I thought he really was waiting for the baby. John Meadors was in the first floor of that courthouse with another assistant attorney general, and he was sort of pacing. And his heart and soul was in this, and I thought when it came back the way that he wanted it to come back, I would say he's probably at the tail end of his career, wouldn't you say, just given his age? He's a contemporary of mine, and so to have the end in Creighton Waters, I mean, talk about somebody who put a heart and soul into something. So to have all, and you know, we can't forget though, you had the Attorney General of South Carolina take a key witness, and he did so well. So it was just a real vindication.
Yes.
Well, we are unfortunately having to wrap up right now because I'm getting word right now that we are going to be going live into our newscast.
Uh-huh. Live
for
TV,
10 o'clock.
Folks.
It is live TV, and we are sharing this set with our live broadcast right now. So we're going to sign off for right now, but know that the sentencing's happening tomorrow. Know that we have every intention. If there are jurors that want to speak to us, we would like to speak to them, and we will be here at this tent, and we are absolutely going to be keeping an eye out for them when they come through. So we will be having another conversation tomorrow evening in our podcast, let you guys know how this all came together, what the sentencing looks like. He could be facing 30 years to life for both of those counts, up to five years for the commission of with the weapon.
And the state intends to pursue life.
Absolutely. So stay tuned to us, and we will get you the latest. I'm Ann Emerson, Drew Tripp, Charlie Condon, Tara Jabour, thrilled to have her, Max Harrison, working the boards. Keep on bringing your questions. We'll keep answering them. Thank you so much for being here tonight.